Golf Weekly
from Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Off the Ball Open in Abu Dhabi this November. Book your place now at offtheball.com/open.
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
I'm a very confident front runner for caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Suck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, Paris Scorcher. Very welcome to a special Golf Weekly. Golf Weekly listeners are just the best, Joe.
Nathan Murphy, hello.
How are you? We are here in Paris Court. We've had a brilliant day. We played the East Course. We have, I presume, some friends of the pod here, yes?
Yeah.
Excellent. What percentage of you have never heard of this pod business and have just come along for the free golf?
Nobody's admitting to it.
So we've had a brilliant day. We've just given out prizes. We won't... put that on the Golf Weekly listeners. They don't need to hear all that. But there were some good scores. 91 points, the winners. Our thanks to Halfpenny Golf. They gave great prizes.
Yeah.
As did Paris Court. They came through for us in a big way. Regular listeners will know that we often get tweets from the Kennedy brothers in New York City.
These guys.
Yeah.
These guys run New York City.
We had hoped for a long time these were literally related to the Kennedys. It turns out John Kennedy is here today.
Right here. I played golf with him. I spent 5 hours with him. I assumed he was either A, related to the Kennedys, or B, a billionaire. Both of which excited me greatly.
It turns out John Kennedy's Irish.
Very much so.
Yeah. The dream of a New York magnate supporting the pod is over. But John, you're very welcome. It's great to have you here.
Are you a billionaire?
Not even close.
Okay. Not a billionaire. We're going to get into things. There's a few bits of housekeeping. We're here to launch the Off the Ball Open.
Yes.
It's a big deal.
It is.
You want to tell people about it?
Well, you should all know this. Everybody here today will have this leaflet in their little prize pack, in their little gift pack that was brilliantly put together by our marketing team. So as you'll know by now, some of you, I hope, are going to be coming with us to Abu Dhabi, 17th to 23rd of November, 2019. It's a five-day trip. It includes, Joe, return flights with Etihad Airways, five nights in the four-star Crown Plaza, two rounds of championship golf, the National Abu Dhabi Golf Course and the Yas Links. Welcome drinks reception, Peter Lorry Golf Clinic.
Approach with caution, I would say, on that one.
Off the Ball Roadshow, Gala Awards Dinner, Airport Golf Transfers, Golf Buggy and Golf Bag Allowance. Does that mean everyone gets a golf buggy?
No, not to keep.
Not to keep?
It's an allowance.
You should, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah.
Don't focus on the negatives here.
I'm just wondering. I'm just wondering how that works out.
How do people come on this trip?
Well, it's very simple, Joe. You just check out cassidygolf.ie. Simple as that.
Very good. And there's a bonus today for coming along?
There is. Everybody here got a little bonus, got a little discount on the trip. Just look inside your goodie bag.
How did you play today, as a matter of interest, I haven't asked you?
You know, there were good moments, and there were moments where I contemplated, what is the point of all this?
I know. I
had many of those moments.
I had one of those days as well. So less said about our golf, the better. We'll get things moving. So later on, we're going to be joined by four-time winner on the European Tour, Ryder Cup player, the winning putt against Ben Crenshaw at the 1987 Ryder Cup. Eamon Darcy's going to be with us, and we're going to chat to him about his career. But first, I mean, we try and get the biggest guests.
Listen, every time we come and we do a Golf Weekly outing, we make sure we've got European Tour winners. Peter Lorry.
Yeah.
He always turns up.
He does.
We decided to just up it slightly this time.
This is the big one.
It's never going to get any better.
No, this is it. 15 majors.
Dear God.
For crying out loud, 15 of them.
It's incredible stuff.
He burst onto the scene in 1997, winning the Masters.
What?
Yeah. And as you would have seen just 2 months ago, he won the Masters.
He didn't.
Again. This is the big one, everyone. Special guest, he's flown in.
Live in Golf Weekly.
Live in Golf Weekly. It's Tiger Woods, everyone! Tiger, it is amazing to have you with us. You played today the Paris Court East Course. How did you find it?
Oh, well, the conditions were really, really tough out there. And but I thought I played good. I putted well, and but my back is pretty bad, and that's from carrying Nathan all day. God, man, you suck.
Wow.
Really, really suck.
Wow. That's harsh.
He is very welcome. Connor Moore is here, everyone. Round of applause. Hey, amazing to have you with us. You've got a nice week lined up. You're playing here today, doing Beg tomorrow, the Pro-Am on Wednesday at Lynch.
How good are you?
18. Jesus.
Huh? In fairness, it's not surprising people think you're an exceptional golfer. Anybody who tuned into Ireland AM yesterday would think that you're an expert, that you're well able to give guidance on the game of golf. Tell us what happened.
You see, well, it's Instagram, isn't it? And it's like a blogger, you know, like a girl who's a blogger. She's not going to put up ugly photographs of herself. She puts up the best ones. So on Instagram, I put up my best swings, and I don't put up the crap ones. And most of them are crap. So a lot of people think, because I have a decent swing, but it's very wayward, that I'm a very good golfer. But again, I'm 18. So Ireland AM were like, will you come on and promote the Irish Open? I was like, yeah, sure. So I didn't even look at the email. But 2 days ago then, I swear to God, 2 days ago then, I get this email saying, can you send us on your putting tips? I was like, what do you mean putting tips? I said, what are you talking about putting tips? So the producer rings me. And she's like, yeah, we need your putting tips. We want to make up a graphic and all, you know. And I was like, why, what's going on here? She goes, you're giving putting lessons on television. I swear to God, I said to her, I was like, you do know what I do, don't you? I was like, I'm like a comedian. She goes, yeah, but the lad said to see you on Instagram and stuff and you're a really good golfer. Anyway, I shot 101 in Mullingar on Saturday. And 13 hours later, I gave a putting lesson on television.
Your life has changed a lot, it's fair to say.
A little bit, yeah.
This is all a bit surreal. Hey, you told an amazing story. We'll get into Tiger and all that stuff in life now, but you just told a mad story, and I don't want to forget it, about doing, I guess, a corporate gig in front of Jack Nicklaus recently.
Yeah, the Players' Championship was on, and obviously it's the PGA Tour's big event. It's their big, the fifth major or whatever. And I ended up doing a gig in the commissioner's house. So you rock in, it's like the Great Gatsby's house, you know, it's all... You know, hors d'oeuvres, all this kind of crack. And I was in there anyway, and I was...
Sorry, what kind of crack?
Did I say that right? Hors d'oeuvres, is it? Just shows you, huh? But,
and who's there?
Sergio was there, Jack was there. It was funny, actually. I was standing there, and I was drinking a glass of water, and I was waiting to go on. And I turned around, and there was Sergio. And so I looked at him, and I was like, oh, well, what's crack or whatever? And he looks at me, he goes, hey, man. And he kind of looked that way, and I was like, Jesus, he either hates me or he doesn't know who I am. So then I was like, right, I'll just turn around and introduce myself. So before I got my hand out, he just goes, and he goes, man, the impression's really good, but what's with the laugh, man? He goes, apparently his wife, when he gets ticket home and stuff like that, she's like, just to piss him off and stuff. But he was great guy. But anyway, I did the gig then. I went up on stage and done the gig. And the commissioner had like blown me up big time anyway. And he was like, and he told Jack Nicklaus, he said, Jack, you've got to come to the front and listen to this guy. So Jack is standing there. The commissioner's here asking me the questions. So I start off the first four impressions. Everyone in the room is laughing, but I kind of feel like Jack is like just kind of watching it. You know, he's like, you know, I don't even know if he was even whatever. Like he was smiling, but he wasn't laughing. And I had no intention of like sneering Jack at all because I was too afraid to like because he's like God. So then after about four impressions, I was doing Bubba and I'm crying. I'm like, oh man, you know, and I'm doing this. And then I look, I was like, is that Jack Nicklaus, man? And I'm like, man, Jack's the greatest golfer of all time. And everyone kind of clapped. And I was like, you don't believe me? Just go ask him. He'll tell you himself. And literally the whole room went, and it only lasted about 2 seconds, but my whole career flashed before my eyes. And I was like, oh, my God. And then he laughed. The whole room laughed. And then it was just, the gig went brilliantly, whatever. So after the gig then, I was chatting to him for a couple of minutes.
What's he like? So,
just a class act. Like, really is a class act. So I told him, I said, you've caused so many rows in my house. I said, because me and my brothers grew up like Tiger fans. So Tiger's the greatest player that ever played the game. We didn't even know anything when we were younger about Jack.
Yeah.
And my dad would come in and go, Jack Nicklaus is the best of all time. And there'd be serious rows in my house. As in, like, we'd be just going at each other and we'd be fighting with my dad saying, Tiger's the best and this, that, and the other. So I was telling Jack this. And I was like, my dad is like your biggest fan. And he was like, whatever. So we're chatting away anyway. A couple of days later, I'm back in New York and I get this email from Jack's manager and it's like, what's your address? So I give him the address or whatever. And I was like, they must be sending me something. So he sends me a picture of me, Jack, and Barbara
And my dad's name is Tom, and in it, dear Tom, thanks for all your support, Jack Nicklaus. And I was like,
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. I'd say, like, were you there when your dad opened it? No?
No, I sent it home with my brother or whatever, so he got it. I was going away for his birthday, but then I was like, you know what? I'll just send it to him now. He was actually, and literally, it is his sporting idol. Yeah. You know, so he was.
Amazing.
It was something money can't buy, you know what I mean? But it was a real touch of class from Jack.
Such a touch of class. Like, there's no payback for that.
He went home and thought of that. Mm. Do you know what I was in? And he's meeting people every, like, all throughout the day that are telling them, you know, it's such an honor or whatever. But he literally went home and made that effort and got the pictures printed, sent to him, and then signed them. He signed one with me and him as well, just to me or whatever. But, a real touch of class, yeah. Mm.
Have you ever been overawed by any of these great sports people you've met?
I was overall meeting Joe all right today, Martin.
Yeah. That's a big one.
I don't think so. Like, you know, it's amazing the more you do it. I suppose when I started off, I started off doing the GA stuff. Mm. And the first guy I met was Joe Brolly. And I remember being over in RT going, Jesus, Joe Brolly. I know. But, like, I remember, and then sat down and we did the gig and... Or I did this video with him and I was just chatting to him. And the more you get to know these people, like, sure, it's like meeting anybody.
Yeah.
Do you know? And it's like, the less you talk about golf to them, I think the more they like.
I'm sure.
Yeah, you have the crack with them.
For you, like, where did all this start? The first time I kind of saw you was at joe.ie. That was where you first kind of popped into my world. Had you been like an overnight success after 5 years of practicing day in, day out? Or like, how did this all come about for you?
No, literally, it was a fight in a GA match. And it was very, very random. And my family are very passionate people. And when I say passionate, they're always rowing in GAA matches. But my cousin got into a row, and me and my uncle were there, and the entire team kind of jumped on him.
Were you playing?
No, I was on the bench, whatever, I was injured. But me and my uncle then, we were like, it was just kind of, obviously, it's a family member, so we jumped the fence in Cusick Park, and we got involved. So my mother rings me up after, and she's like, I heard there was a big, huge row. I was like, oh yeah, I was like, Ned and Eddie and I were involved and everything. I was like, it was shocking. She was like, were you involved? I was like, no, it wasn't. So the newspaper comes out on the Wednesday and there's a picture of me like this. With this fella from the Downs, whatever, from this GA club. And then I was, they were going to suspend me or whatever. And in the end then, nobody got suspended because they cited wrong people, something like that. And I literally had seen Snapchat had this face swap app. So I literally did a video then of Joe Brolly going, you know, those Moors are absolute tramps, so they are, you know. And I sent it into the group, and the boys were like, geez, that's brilliant. And even when I look back at it now, it wasn't good at all.
Right.
Like, to the standards that I'd have now. And the boys were like, you've got to put that online. And I was thinking, but sure, it's a row in a Mullingar. No one's going to care.
Yeah.
But the next day, I did a thing called Off the Ball, and it got like 60,000 hits. And the guys from Joe rang me up and were like, come up to Joe, we want to talk to you. We might have a job for you.
Wow.
So I walked up, and we're in the meeting with Niall McGarry and Paddy McKenna, and they look at me, and they're like, so show us your stuff. I was like, what do you mean? They're like, you know, what else have you got? I was like, well, that's it, the video you just seen. That's literally all I have. And they were like, well, this is a waste of time. We taught you an impression. So I was like, yeah, I am. I was like, yeah, well, like, I was kind of trying to convince them. I was like, if you literally give me the job, I promise you I'll get better at it and all this. So they gave me a week to come back with Premier League impressions. So I did. I sent it to them, and the boy was like, no, he's not good enough. And they didn't give me the job. And I was like, I was so disappointed because I was selling phones at the time. I was one of those people, you know, I could save money off your phone bill, but I was robbing you at the same time. But so I was literally in a call center doing this kind of crack. And then I was like...
And what age were you then?
27.
27.
But they gave me a week to come back with impressions. And I seen in the week... the improvement on some of the impressions. And I was going, if I work at this, I could, like... Mm. So literally, the next day, I said to my mother, I was like, I'm going to set up my own page and I'm going to, you know, go at this stuff. And she's like, oh, fair play, that's brilliant, yeah. I said, yeah, I quit my job there yesterday, by the way. She's like, you did what? I was like, yeah, I quit my job. And I literally quit the job and I just started making videos. And that was it.
Up until that point, up until you do that Joe Brolly video, had you been a guy who was taking the mick out of your mates, doing impersonations? Had you, you know, was this like 10 years of you practicing this without noticing? Because it's kind of remarkable that you'd be so good at it without even trying it before.
To be honest, no. Literally, like, my friends were like, Jesus Christ, you're able to do that? Like, my best friends. No one really knew. When I was a kid, I watched Apri match live at the Olympia.
Yeah.
My dad got this DVD. And I was sitting there watching him hysterically laughing. And I was going, like, it must be funny. My father's laughing at it. So I thought it was funny. And I started, like... kind of doing impressions of them,
yes,
and their impressions. But I'd say I didn't do an impression for about 12 years, except doing my uncle down in my GA club. He'd leave the dressing room and I'd be impersonating to the boys, like taking the piss out of him or whatever. But
that's unbelievable.
I didn't, but kind of how I got good at it was I'd listen to music a lot. Like, so what I did with my phone was I was going, I listen to music about 2.5 hours a day, like between the bus and, you know,
sure,
commute and stuff. And I was like, so I deleted all the music and I downloaded just people's voices. So when I'm walking around town in Dublin, I have earphones in and I'd be like, oh man, the conditions are really tough out there. People think I'm talking to someone, but I'm walking around doing the impressions, practicing, listening in my head. I was doing Harrington one day actually, and this girl walked up, she knew me from Mullingar, and she was coming up behind me or whatever, and she was about to stop me and go, oh well. And I was like walking along going, yeah, sure, it's great, you know, it's great crack, you know, delighted with that and all. And she kind of stopped and she starts walking after me. She's like, what the fuck are you doing? I was like, I was on the phone. She was like, to who? I was like, oh, sorry. I was telling her then, I was like, literally, and that's how I think I got good at it. Like, literally, so instead of like listening to music now, I just listen to people's voices.
And that was after you got the break at Joe, where you said, I need to get good at this, not before.
Oh, yeah, that was after.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that video just came out of nowhere, and I kind of seen this opportunity, and I was like, because I was working, and I was like, when I went up to Joe, I was like so excited because I thought I had this job. And then when I didn't get it, I was so disappointed.
You weren't enjoying your previous job?
No, I actually was. I'd like, we had a great out laughing, or me and the boys, like, just sitting there selling phones to people. Is the coverage good? Oh, yeah, you have 100% coverage down there and whatever. And I wouldn't mind. When I left then, I think there was some sort of inquiry about some yolk I sold as well. I was delighted I got out of there in time anyway. I think I was about to get the chop.
Yeah. Would you have been regarded as funny by your mates growing up? Because there's the do the impersonation, and then there's you actually have to write funny stuff. Like the Après Match lads can do both. You have to be able to do both.
Yeah. Like funny, not so much, but if me and the boys seen something funny happen and we met people and they were about to tell the story, they'd stop and say, you tell it. Because I was a very good storyteller. When I was in college and stuff, I'd be kind of the guy that people would be sitting around and I'd be like, half it's lies, obviously. That's how you're a good storyteller, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I was kind of the storyteller in my group, yeah.
So that's a good sign that you're kind of on the right track then, or that you had a funny bone there.
Yeah, I think, and I grew up like a very GEA, like I grew up in a dressing room, like, so I've got kind of like when I do a video, I kind of think, would the boys find that funny?
Mm.
Do you know what I kind of...
They're your audience in your head.
Yeah, and I have like my two brothers and stuff and one of my mates, Paul Christie, I'd send them stuff all the time and they're very honest with me.
Okay.
Like they'll be like, that's shite.
And have you a good sense now of what's going to land? Like if you make something, do you know this just works? Because we all get kind of good, you mentioned Instagram, people get very good at knowing what stuff tends to get likes, what doesn't. We have an algorithm going on in our head. Are you getting pretty good at understanding what's going to go viral, what's not, and why?
Yeah, well, my kind of strategy is, like, I won't do a video for no reason. Like, I won't just, you know, tonight put out, like, 30 impressions and be like, look at this. It will get views and likes and stuff, but if the World Cup is coming up,
yeah,
or the Masters is coming up, it was like I had the idea to do the Masters video 2 months before it. No, in fairness, I had to learn a bunch of new impressions for it or whatever, but the whole idea was put it out on the Monday of the Masters, and that's the best time because people are thinking about golf. And I still do that, like with the Golf Channel. You only kind of put stuff out when it's topical because the internet's like that. The internet is very much what's topical works.
Yeah.
It doesn't. You could have a brilliant piece of comedy, put it on the internet, and it kind of has no context and it will get lost. You could have something that's not really funny at all, but it's about something that happened today and people will share the hell out of it.
Okay.
And it kind of just works like that, yeah.
Right.
Had you any sense of how successful the golf side it would become? Because you understand in Ireland, GAA is huge. Premier League football, you can understand why people would want you to do Premier League impressions. Golf is a little bit more niche. And when you go away from Tiger, Rory, there's very few golfers who actually the general public recognize.
Yeah. No, when I did the golf video, I remember I was working with Joe.ie at the time. And at the time, the GAA got really big and the soccer was getting big. And I was kind of getting itchy feet because, well, they were paying me my wages. So I was exclusive to them. So people were coming in and asking me to do stuff. And I was kind of like raging. I couldn't do this, that, and the other. And one of the things I asked was to do a golf video. They were like, why do you want to do a golf video? And I was like, I think it could be big. Now, in my head, big, I was just thinking of another source of income. I was thinking like golf clubs around Ireland, in the UK, maybe even America, they'll bring you in to do impressions or whatever. I didn't know what was going to happen like when I did that video.
Just exploded.
It was mad. It was obviously it was last year at the Masters and the thing just like took off. I was sitting there in the house and my phone kept like going off.
Yeah.
because it was just like trickling and trickling and whatever, like a notification after notification. And then I went to bed. I woke up the next morning and my phone was just like stuck and it kept getting stuck. But Sergio was after retweeting the video.
Okay.
And he was like, man, this guy's hilarious.
And so the golf channel ring you and say, come work for us?
Yeah, the boys brought me over for the Players' Championship last year. So I went over and it was like unbelievable. Like it was just, as soon as I got, see at the time, when I did the first video, they emailed me and they were like, we'll do some work with you, we'll do a few videos. But on the Saturday then I put out a video of the boys in the locker room and kind of, instead of just doing the impressions, I showed them a sketch. Mm. Now, not directly, but it was like, I did it so that they'd see it. When they seen the sketch then, they were like, you know what, maybe we could actually do some really good comedy over. And then when I got to the golf channel, they were like, and I was kind of looking for a bit of direction off them, and they were like, you're not going to get any direction off here. Like, we've 90 hours of live TV without a single joke all week. So there's no one going to help you here. They were like, it's up to you. It's up to you to do it. Like, which has been great. Like, they've been brilliant to work for, like, you know, and they're like all about pushing me out there and like they really have it. And they just let you at it, like, you know. Sometimes they're like, geez, you can't put that out. Yeah. You know, after certain things.
Because you've been in New York for like the last, what, 7 months?
9 months, yeah.
9 months.
Drinking in the Long Hall. Johnny Kennedy's pub.
Yeah. And so, like, are you busy? Are you working flat out day in, day out? Or are you actually just having a good time and doing the odd video here or there?
When I was in Ireland, I was, like, busy all the time. I was, like, I used to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, go to the gym, and I'd, like, kind of treat my week like a normal working week. And then when I was in America the last 9 months, I was, like, going to bed at 6 o'clock in the morning. So it was just, like, it was definitely different, like. I went off the beer for 10 weeks before the Masters.
Right.
I did loads of work. I did a racing video, Paddy Power. I did the Masters video. I learned some new impressions, and then the Masters came, and I came back, and I'd say I was on the. I'm still on the beer from about then. Yeah.
Is it difficult when you're working for Golf Channel then to work on demand because you obviously just started out? Well, 18 months doing the golf impersonations, that you could pick your moments, you could build it up, you could have it all planned exactly the way you want it. I guess Golf Channel wants you to churn it out. So is there any worry of quality control at any stage?
No. There was certain videos where I was like, well, like I did a Bryson video recently of him around the house. And I remember after it was edited, I was like, and they were like, want mad to put it out. And I kind of felt the impression wasn't there. And it was I don't know, I just wasn't happy with the end product. So I just said, listen, I don't want that going out. And they're literally like, fine. Like, they're unbelievably brilliant to work for.
Right.
And and the guys that are dealing with me, like, are just so accommodating. Like, and again, they look at it and they go, you know what you're doing, yeah. So you just do it.
The call comes one way or another about Tiger Woods.
Yeah, did it? I don't know. I was literally in Mullingar. It was after the Ryder Cup. And the Ryder Cup was, like, just massive. Because I did the video for the European team. And when I did it, I didn't even know the boys were watching on the Monday night. And Tuesday morning, I wake up and my phone's going mad because Poulter said, like, yeah, you know, Conor done a video and it was hilarious. And he was like, I don't think you're going to get to see it. But, you know, and everyone then was looking for this video. And it was mad. There was someone took a picture of the television in America. There was a picture of the... It was like USA versus Europe, and the back of the screen was a split screen, and one side of it was Michael Jordan, that the USA brought him in, and the other side of it was me. Who got the victory? But, yeah, I did that, and I remember leaving Paris, and I was like, Jesus, like, this is unbelievable. Like, yeah. The whole week was just magical, like, and about a week later, I was
sorry,
at home.
Sorry, I remember bumping into you that week.
Yeah, I met you too. Yeah.
Hang on, did you say you were going for dinner with Nick Faldo one night?
Yeah. That was just to annoy you, because
it did.
We talked about that night.
Because I think we were walking along the 18th, and we spotted this Irish guy surrounded by two of the wealthiest looking Americans I have ever seen, asking for a selfie.
No, I remember that. Yeah, we met. Yeah.
I kid you not. I swear to God, we were working really late that night. We sat like in our little bed sit,
no
sharing like you know shoes off, the smell of feet, eating KFC, going. I fucking hate that guy.
Do you know what I was doing? I was literally saying, no, take that wine back. I want something else.
So you actually did have dinner with Nick Faldo?
Yeah. Now, he probably... Anytime I'm in the area, whatever, him and Lindsay, his partner, always bring me off like for dinner and stuff like that. Like, he's good crack. Like, he actually is a good...
They, like, adopted you or something.
Sort of, yeah. Well, listen, they have a lot of money, so they can adopt me all they want.
What's he like? Because he had a bad reputation on tour for not being very friendly. quiet, but
dead sound. He's like, yeah. He's a laugh. Yeah. He really is a laugh. Like, you know, he's just good crack. Like, you know, he's. I actually had dinner in his house there at the Players Championship and stuff, and like, he was giving me swing lessons. I was showing him my backswing. He was like, "Mate, that's a swing and a half." And I thought it was a compliment. He was like, "Half a swing will do," because I'd go very far back.
Thanks, Nick. So anyway, after dinner with Nick Faldo and the Ryder Cup, when does the Tiger thing start?
Yeah, what happened was Bridgestone followed me on Twitter.
What do you think? That's more money one way or another?
No, I was like, oh man, they're going to send me some free golf balls probably.
Yeah,
you
okay,
know?
Good.
You know, the whole Instagram thing. So I followed them back and then I got this message, can we talk to you about an opportunity or something? And I was like, I genuinely thought, I'm going to do a little thing for them and I'll get paid and I'll get some golf balls or whatever. Mm. And my agent rings me up and she's like, she's kind of hysterical on the phone. And she's like, Bridgestone are after contacting us here. And the subject is potential opportunity with Tiger Woods. And when I heard it, I was like, oh my God. But I genuinely, and I'm not saying this, but I actually didn't really believe it and I didn't let myself get up. Because I was like, so I was asking him, I was like, does Tiger know about this? And they were like, not yet. But we're going to broach it with him in the next 2 or 3 days. And we're going to talk to his agent. We actually reached out to his agent just, Bridgestone were saying this, we reached out to his agent just about an hour ago. So we'll know in the next 2 or 3 days. And within about 3 hours, I got this email back from my agent going, Tiger's up for it.
Wow.
And I was like, Jesus, like. So we end up, flying to Atlanta on the 10th of December. And we did the ad. It was just unbelievable.
And in the build-up to that ad, playing around with the concept or you're coming up with ideas, like, do you come up with that idea or do they say, look, we've come up with this, Tiger's given it the okay, this is what we're doing. Is there much playing around? Because comedy's, you know, that bit different.
There was a bit. I kind of thought I'd be a bit more involved in the writing of it and stuff, but I wasn't. So I was given these scripts. But when I was looking at the scripts, I was like, I can do an impression of Tiger, but if I don't say the conditions are really, really tough out there and like really good and putting well and these kind of Tigerisms, well, how am I going to come across as Tiger?
Yeah.
So initially I was looking at, it was all about the golf ball. It was like, oh man, this golf ball's groovy and this kind of stuff. And I was looking at the script and I was like, I got there to Atlanta the night before and the director was like, he was kind of saying, the initial idea was Tiger would be kind of stoic and wouldn't really respond or like laugh or whatever. And I was kind of thinking like, he's got to laugh. Do you know? So when we got there, every time I looked at him, I was like, and I delivered the line, conditions, oh man, yeah, because the conditions are really tough out there. And he would just break down laughing. And he's like, God, man, you sound just like me. And one of the parts was at the end, the director said to me, he said, just go and give, do Tiger to Tiger and start messing with him and say stuff. So I was like, really? And he was like, really? I was like, really? And I was like, that's what I said, really, really. And we're doing this thing back and forth. And at the end of it, then I go, oh man. And he goes, dude, I don't say, oh. And he starts laughing. And literally, that was they put that into the ad.
Yeah.
So it was a natural kind of reaction of his to, oh, dude, I don't go, oh.
Yeah. How did you sleep the night before? Who did you bring with you? Give us the kind of behind the scenes.
I rang Bridgestone up. And my brother's a huge Tiger fan. And it was coming up to Christmas or whatever. And he's always doing stuff for me. So I was like, this is... And my cousin, when I go out to America, always puts me up in the house. But he's the type of guy who reminds you of how much he does for you all the time. Do you know? He's like, you know, I brought you here and you stayed in my house 6 months rent free. All this kind of stuff. So I was like, I'm going to put this to bed.
That's your best impression.
But so I said to Bridgestone, I was like, listen, I'm a bit nervous about going on my own. And like, in truth, I wasn't really, like, I was mad excited for it. But I was like, could I bring my manager and my agent, you know, for a bit of company? They were, of course, yeah, no problem at all. So I rocked up with the brother and the cousin then. They were my manager and my agent. But it was funny.
Your brother's basically like your twin.
Yeah, no, he's very like me. And Tiger said that as soon as he walks in. He's like, God, dude, he looks just like you. But my brother walked in and, like, I knew bringing the two boys, they wouldn't be like, oh, my God, Tiger, and like, they're cool enough, so I knew they wouldn't do that. So they walked in, and Tiger was just sitting there with the hat on backwards, like, and he was just on his iPad, and he comes up. Well, when I walked in, I said, well to him, but I went into the room then, and I was in the room, I was looking out, and my brother walks in with my gear bag, and I seen him looking at Tiger, and Tiger just stands up and goes, hey, Tiger. And my brother's like, I know. And then he's looking at me and I'm like, oh, fucking hell, man. But he was just so, he was class.
Was he? Because I mean, that's the thing, and I appreciate you kind of, you don't want to tell tales or whatever, but the new softer Tiger, the nicer Tiger. A lot of people would have read the book. We talked about it in the podcast a lot. There's just so many isolated stories of him being a bit of an ass, like in a very casual way to basically everyone he meets. And I don't know if you went with that slight worry. I hope he's not an ass. What's he like these days?
No, obviously he, like, he has a reputation of being kind of guarded in a sense.
Sure.
But when I went there, like that book, whatever, I never read that book because I didn't want to read it and like have this idea of someone that I don't know. Mm. And when I went there, he genuinely was he's one of the nicest guys I've ever met. Like, and that's no joke. He was like so, he was very engaging. Like when you were talking to him, like he would like, he'd always have, I was like, oh, my brother's living in London. Oh, and what does he do? And then all of a sudden, 15 minutes later, I'm like, I'm out there shouting on about my brother to this fella for 15 minutes. Yeah. And I was like, and he would just like, he was just class. And I was.
So you felt he was listening to you, he was engaged in the conversation, he was...
Massively, yeah. He was like, and even with my brother, like, my brother set up his own company and stuff, and Tiger was over, like, giving him, like, advice and everything, and he, you know, and then he was giving me a bit of golf advice. I was telling him, last year, the captain's prize in my club, so it's the big competition, and I only kind of really started playing golf last year. I played a bit before that, but I was more into the GA stuff, so I gave up playing football last year. My uncle was the manager of the team. I think I was getting dropped anyway. He was delighted when I said to him, I think I'm going to, like, pack it in. He was like, oh, Jesus, no. And then I but apparently, he was behind me back. He said, you know, he made an easy decision for me there. You know? So I started playing loads of golf, and I got into this really rich vein of form last year. I was off 20, and the captain's prize was on, and I went out the first day. And I went out the night before, and I was mad hungover. And I woke up and I was lying in bed and my dad was the captain of the club. So this is his big, big day. And I look at my watch and I'm like, oh shit, I'm late. So I go into the brother. He was out with me and we're playing together. And I'm like, get the stuff, come on quick. So we drive out like a million miles an hour out to the golf club. I run up to the tee, throw the bag down. My father's there getting a picture with every single person that tees off for the captain's prize. And he looks at me and he looks at the watch and he goes, what's this? And I was like... and he goes, you're an hour and a half early. And I was like, what? I'd read the tea time wrong when I was in the bed. I was like half dying or whatever. So for the first time ever, I warmed up. So I was like chipping and I was like putting. So I had nothing else to do for an hour and a half. And my brother actually went in for the cure. I think he had two Heinekens. He played terribly. But I ended up shooting the lights. I had a 68, an 86, which was my best score at the time. So right. I had a 66 net. And I was leading qualifier going in, and I was playing against all these guys that have been trying to win this for years. And I was telling Tiger this, because he was asking, do you play much golf? And I was telling him about the captain's prize or whatever. So all week, my driving was pretty bad, but my putting was great. And all week, I was like, if I get the driving right, like, I'll murder these boys. I was like, I'm off 20. Like, so I stand up in the tee box, and I'm saying to myself, if I stand out in front of people all the time and all that, like, what pressure? So I get up the tee box, and I drive it smack right down the middle. And my outlet has to be impartial. He's like, oh, best of luck. And he's there. When I'm walking off, he's like, come on, outdo it. You know? So it goes down the middle, and I pitch onto the green, and I'm about 14 feet above the pin, downhill putt. And I stand up, and I actually was walking to the green. And in my head, I was like, what will I say tonight now for my speech? I was looking at the two lads I was playing with, like, and there were two, like, former captains and stuff. And I was like, I'm going to murder these boys out of life. You know, and then all of a sudden, I hit the... I don't know what it was, but I stood up in the tee. And I was grand. And when I stood up in the tee... Or not the tee, sorry, on the green. And I grabbed the club. My hands were like this. And I was kind of going, like, what is wrong with you? I was like, you know, I don't care. I'm not a golfer. I'm just here having a crack. Just so all of a sudden, I hit this putt. It goes about 4 feet in front of me. Another 4 feet. And then I literally... It rims the hole and goes in for a tree putt. So the second hole comes up. I tree put that again. And I was telling Tiger this, and I was like...
In this kind of detail?
Oh, yeah, no, we were there all day. Sure. Yeah.
Some time. What else did he be doing?
But I was like, so I had this tree putt, and I was like, I lost it. And he's like, dude, it can happen. You know, first club championship, and, you know... He's like, get nervous, and that'll happen, you know? But, you know, experience, and you'll be good. I was like, yeah, I lost it by three shots. He goes, oh. And I was like, I had nine tree putts and a four putt. He goes, fuck, that's a lot of putts. And literally, my brother was there. My brother's always telling that story, and he's like, I swear to God, boys, Tiger was disgusting. he was like, fuck, that's a lot of pot. But,
oh, dear.
And I gave a putting lesson on TV on Sunday.
So have you got Tiger's number now?
No. I wish.
Who are your golfers that you do? You do Tiger, Justin. You're Justin Rose, good.
Actually, I was at the Open last year, and it was obviously my first Open Championship. And I was walking along; it was a practice round. Yeah. So I'm walking along with one of the girls from the Golf Channel, and all I can hear is, you know, a lot of ebbs and flows, peaks and valleys. You know, it's, but I'm not worried; I'm an Olympic champion. So I look around; it's Justin Rose doing my impression of him to
no
me.
Way. They all seem to take it well.
They all do, yeah.
Anyone trying to take it well, but secretly not liking it?
I don't think so. Not that I've met. No, Sergio was a legend.
Because I would have thought Sergio as well would take himself very seriously.
I thought Poulter was going to take himself seriously. I actually... now, I pre-record some of the videos. At the Open last year, then I had a pre-record ready to go where I was doing David Fegherty. You know, Fegherty does the Golf Channel stuff. And he was like the psychologist. And Poulter was like talking about the US Open. I just can't remember. And it was a big shambles. And he's like, you know, that's... you know why they made it so difficult at the US Open, don't you? And he's like, oh, why? And he's like, yeah, because they're trying to stop me from breaking Jack's record. You know, and this kind of... But... Poulter missed the cut. And then that video was scheduled to go out, and it went out. Uh-oh. And I was like, oh, uh-oh, shit. Uh-oh. He's going to think, like, I've literally just
put
kicked him when he's down.
Yeah.
And then this tweet comes in. He goes, this guy is hilarious. And literally, he's been an absolute... We're trying to get something going with him, a video and stuff. He'd be always tweeting me and stuff like that. Like, you know, he'd really, like, just gets a buzz off it. Like, and sometimes I'm like, have I took the piss out of him a bit too much? And when you think he does, then he'd tweet out the video, and he's like, this is, you know, funny.
What about Bubba?
I actually thought Bubba maybe didn't take it well, but someone from the Golf Channel told me, he's like, man, dude, that guy has me down. He was like, but the crying and all that, that actually, you know Rory's stories?
Yeah.
When I was doing the video last year, I didn't have many Americans in, and it took me ages to get Tiger. My brother was like, you've got to get Tiger.
Yeah.
He goes, so I had to sit in my room for 4 days because I gave up on Tiger because I didn't think I could do him. So I sat in the room for 4 days and just done him. And then Rory Stories was like, so who have you got in the video? And I was telling Rory about it, and he was like, what about Bubba Watson? And I was like, nah, I don't have enough time to learn how to do him. He says, all you have to do is like have him crying.
Yeah.
So literally the video comes up, and it's like, Tiger talks, Sergio talks, and then it comes to Bubba. He's like, yeah. And all the comments then were like, man, that Bubba impression was spot on.
Spot on.
Literally, I couldn't do it. Now I can do him now, but at the time I couldn't do him, yeah.
The 4 days in your room, are you literally watching Tiger Woods talk, try and imitate Tiger Woods talk, or are you looking for the equivalent of the Sergio laugh? You can get a spot on impression of someone, or you can do like the Bubba Sergio thing, which is like a slightly unfair twist on them.
Yeah, well, it all depends. Some characters give you that and some don't.
Yeah.
But like I tried to get it as close as I can get it. But then you got it like Poulter, I could do maybe even better than I do. But it's funnier when it's, oh yeah, for sure. You know, it's just kind of funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know, then I remember doing Joe Brolly at gigs and I was wondering, I was like, it's not that funny. People don't really, but people are kind of looking at it going, wow, it's spot on.
Right.
But like when you're in a room like this, like do I want people to go, wow, geez, that's spot on? Or do I want people laughing?
Yeah.
So you want people laughing. So it's more important to be funny
than
accurate.
So give us Brolly and what Brolly is kind of...
Well, you know, Joe talks like that, you know, and he talks a lot of shit, you know, this kind of thing. But when I was doing him, I was doing it like that. So now at gigs, it's like, well, I tell you, you can totally forget about him as far as he's a man. So you kind of do it that way. And it's funnier, like, people laugh more at it, like, so it is kind of, you just have to find that balance where, like, I wouldn't do someone if I didn't think it was, like, close enough.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I like to get it to as near as I can get it and then work backwards on it and find where it's funny.
Brolly loves it.
Oh, he loves it. He can't get enough. So his name on the internet and stuff like that, he just loves all that crap. He's brilliant, though. He's become like a really good friend and stuff, you know. Maybe if I didn't meet him that time, I don't know what way it would have went, because he was tweeting the videos out when nobody was.
Okay.
Do you know, so he was like straight from the off. He was a fan of the Connor sketches, a fan of the pod.
Because and then you did this on the game that time. That was a really good one.
Yeah, he got me into that. He was walking past the room in RT, and he was over there doing something. And he goes, "What are you all doing in here?" And this was Sunday game people. They're like, "Oh, we're trying to think of some ideas." He goes, "I have a brilliant one. Get your man Connor Sketches to come on, and you know, let him rip me out. The people will love it." So it was his idea. They were like, "Great idea." So they brought me down. I think got like a million views or something like that. But he loved it. He was like texting me for days. You know, they're still texting me. He goes, and he was like, "It's going to 700,000 views, Paul. It's going to 800,000 views. It's after going a million. This is unbelievable."
Who's next?
I have to sober up and think about that one, don't I? I don't know. At the minute, well, the Open, it's condensed this year. Do you know? So the Open, I have a couple of videos for the Open to come.
Yeah.
And I suppose after that, then you'll take stock. Like, but you'll be looking at next year nearly. Do you know? Because most of the videos will be done. And you might get a couple of stories before the end of the year. You might get two or three videos out, but you're not going to get much. So Gary Player I've done, and that one, like, when I do that, you know, because Player, I tell you now, absolutely great. He's got that... He's hilarious, you know. It's like, I played the Masters Championship in my first one, 1872. Right? And it's like, and he at live gigs, like, it's mad. Even Molinari was, when I did the video for the Ryder Cup team, I'd never done Molinari before. So they sent me this kind of script at the European Tour, and I was like, looking at it, I was like, ah. So I just wrote my own script and sent it back. But there was a couple of players I needed a little bit of info on, and they were like, oh, Molinari's just deadpan. And I didn't actually kind of cop to any of this. So then I did him in the video. And obviously, if you've seen the behind-the-scenes video, like, he was just laughing. The boys were all laughing at him. But that now at live gigs, like, I just stand there. Oh, it's so great to be here. You know, it's just amazing. And you just do that, and everyone's hysterically laughing. But, like, it was, again, some of these things, you just fall on top of them, you know. And it's,
yeah. Yeah. Your Premier League stuff is off the charts as well.
Thanks, Joe.
Holy moly. It's so good. Like, Jesus. That must go global big time as well. Like, is that a different level to golf?
No, for me, nothing really tops the golf.
Right.
Like, I suppose maybe it's America, I don't know. But the soccer's brilliant and stuff. But when I was growing up, I was, like, playing GAA and stuff. But I was more into golf. I'm into soccer as well. I'm a Liverpool fan. Mm. But I'm not hugely into it.
Okay.
So I'm not always watching it. And, like, it's like when you're doing this thing, you have to be, I think, you have to be interested in the sport you're doing. Because then it's not really work.
Mm.
Like, technically, I could tell you, oh, I have to go and work tomorrow. I have to, like, watch the US Open or something. Technically, I know it would make you sick, wouldn't it? Technically, it's like work.
Yeah.
Do you know, for me. But it's not, because I'd be watching it anyway. So the soccer, I like doing the soccer, and it is good. But, like, the people online are just mad as well, like, when you're dealing with soccer fans. Yeah. Golf people are so polite. Like, if they thought it wasn't a good impression, they're like, I didn't think his, like, Jim Nance wasn't very good there. But soccer fans are like, die, you fucking, whatever, you know.
Who do you like doing in the football?
Mourinho.
Give it to us.
I prefer not to speak. I have nothing to say. Nothing. Nothing. Him. Klopp. I do a bit of Klopp. Do Rio Ferdinand is kind of popular. Harry Kane.
I just want you to do all these people now.
You want to do Harry Kane?
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously, it's incredible. It's, yeah, and it's amazing. And, you know, it's brilliant.
Harry Kane definitely doesn't like your Harry Kane.
What's mad is I'm actually mates with a couple of lads that are mates with him, and the boys... Did he get me to send videos to different people or like, give me some of this or whatever, and like I sent one to Justin Rose one day and he sent one back, and then one of the boys was like, oh, send a thing to Harry Kane. So I was like, I sent it to him to send to Harry Kane. Then he was like, man, I'm not sending that to him. He was like
So what does the future hold for you? Are you going to stay here, or are you going to base yourself in the States? Do you know what the
plan
is?
I was in the States for the last 9 months, and yeah. I came home last week. I kind of came home like to practice, because I'm playing in the Pro-Am on Wednesday, and I don't want to embarrass myself, but I think it's kind of that chip I sailed.
I fear for you.
I'm playing actually Donaghy tomorrow in the Atlantic, Wild Atlantic shootout. And if he loses to me, like after what you've seen out there today, it'll be very, very embarrassing for him.
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to that tomorrow. But in terms of the future,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't think too much about it.
Do you not, really? No. There's no strategy, there's no long term.
Like in what I do, week to week, and I'll always have goals and things like that, but like I don't be like I have to do this or I have to do that, because I kind of find like things just happen, random things happen, and you know, I might go into another game or two, I might look at different sports that haven't been maybe touched before, things like that, but for the minute, just enjoying it. Like
it must be the most surreal thing. Like, do you find yourself in, I'd say you do, in certain situations thinking, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, sometimes it's some gigs. Like, I was doing a gig for Michael Dell in his house one day. Dell Computers, like, he's worth like $20 billion. He had all these CEOs from all over America, and you're shaking this fella's hand, and the fella's then in your ear going, oh, he's worth $6 billion, and this fella's worth this and that, and you're walking around. But I was in the house then, and I did this gig for him, and like, I find here, like, if I start sneering you and you, everyone in the room is kind of laughing at it. Over there, not as much.
Right.
So I was in Michael Dell's house, and I thought it would be wise if I started sneering him. I think, but I don't know. It was like no one really was laughing. Everyone was kind of like, oh. Like looking, and then I was like, so I just cut it short and just kept going. But the gig went really well.
Yeah.
And after he was like, he brought me down. He was like, introduce him to this person, that person. I kind of thought I was funny then. I was like getting a bit cocky and confident. Then I was sitting there and I was drinking a glass of wine with him. And we're sitting at this table and we're like, he's like, so what are you doing tonight? And I was like, we're going to go into Sixth Street, which is in Austin. And we're going drinking or whatever. I says, you should come down with us, me and the boys. It was like Johnny and a few of these lads. He's like, oh, I don't know. I was like, ah, come on. They're doing $2 whiskeys, man. And nobody in the room got it, or nobody at the table got it. Everyone was just like looking at me, and I was like, Jesus Christ, it's a tough crowd. No one got it at all. He was like, oh, I don't know, I don't know. He like took it seriously that I was saying $2 whiskeys.
Have you any concerns about those Bridgestone balls? Because they weren't really dropping today.
A couple of putts slipped out, I will be honest. I was unlucky. I was close enough to breaking the course record, but I'm happy with my 98. I was good crack. It was great crack out there today, and I have to say, playing with Jerry and Nathan here. We kind of panicked after. After about 11, we realized like we weren't in the prizes,
yeah.
So we had our own little game then, which Johnny and they murdered us, I think 4 or 5 nil or something. Didn't they? Did we win any holes?
No, we won one hole.
Oh, yeah, where I actually knocked it in, 8 iron, 6 feet from the pin. And he ended up getting a par, and I ended up bogeying the hole. So I 3-putt.
Another 3-putt.
It's a lot of 3-putts.
A lot of 3-putts. That's a lot of putts.
It's all right. At least at the Irish Open, I'm sure there'll be nobody following Niall Horan's group.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's going to be a bit like playing with Tiger Woods. Yeah, you know where you're the guy. They're not there to see you. They're there to see him. But you're going to feel the pressure of the crowd watching you and stuff. So it'll be good crack anyway. Like, you know.
Have you played one before?
A pro-am, no. I only played Lynx Golf for the first time about 3 weeks ago in the hitch.
Oh, God.
Swear to God. I went down to so Paul McGinley, we were chatting to him, and so he got me in the pro-am, and he's like, so do you want to play La Hinch? And I was like, yeah. So I came home from my brother's stag, and I literally got La Hinch on the worst day of the year. Like, I mean, we were nearly blown into the sea on some of the holes. And I was looking at the caddy, and you have this impression about Lynx Golf that it's really tough. And I was looking at the caddy, and I was like, the wind was coming into my face, and I was walking like this. And he was only there, but I had to shout. I was like, is it always like this down here? And he was kind of laughing, going, oh, this is the worst day of the year. But in my head, I was kind of thinking, Jesus Christ, Lynx Golf is hard. So I probably will embarrass myself. If you want to laugh, I think I'm off at 2 o'clock on Wednesday.
Good to know. Listen, thanks so much for doing this, because I know you're busy and you're down to Doombeg tomorrow, and it's great to have you here, because I think everyone's just watching you do amazing things, and it's amazing, it's brilliant, and everybody's big fans talking to people when they knew you were here. It was like, great, I'll definitely stay for the dinner now, so that's always a good sign. Stay sitting, actually, because we're going to bring Eamon Darcy in chat.
Sure.
Or do you need to go? Yeah, do. Okay, but a round of applause. Conor Moore, everyone. Four-time winner in the European Tour, four-time Ryder Cup player, famously part of the 1987 Ryder Cup on US soil. He held the winning putt against Ben Crenshaw. Delighted he's here. It's Eamon Darcy, everyone.
Hey, Eamon, Nathan.
Well,
how are you?
Good.
Eamon, thanks for coming on.
Very welcome.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you with us. We've never had you on the pod before, so it's a nice place to do it, nice part of the world to do it. You're nearby here, aren't you?
I didn't have far to come.
Yeah.
No.
You're living nearby?
Just out at the back gate.
Okay, and yeah. Is this where you play, or are you knocking around?
I sneak in here every now and then.
Yeah. You were playing today, I heard.
I played 9 holes with Bernard Gibbons. Do you know Bernard?
No.
Okay.
There's a story there.
That's the end of that story.
It's a bit of a cul-de-sac probably there. And how are you playing? Are you hitting it well?
I was hitting it too often.
I presume the thing everyone says to you is about your swing and about the uniqueness of your swing.
I hope you're not going to say about my swing, are you?
I am such a fan of your swing. I mean, to do what you do, and it's just so your own, and it was unique. Did you ever have a lesson? Like, it just seems like it's totally homemade and natural talent, and you've almost created it yourself in a way.
I created it, all right. It was just, I guess it was something I was born with, because nobody could teach anybody to swing it the way I did.
No, it wouldn't have been best practice if you were a pro teaching a kid.
No. But you know, it's funny you should say that. Now some of the teachers are starting to teach some of the guys to take it a little bit more outside the line than they used to, you know? So maybe somebody has been watching a few of my old videos.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I was on like page 3 of Google or something ridiculous last night looking up bits about your career, and somebody has written a big, long, you know, broke your swing down phase by phase and made the point that, yes, it's, you'll know more than me, obviously, but up, very upright and steep and looks a bit quirky. But then actually from kind of here towards impact, you're in all the good positions. Could you give us a breakdown of what you're doing, or do you, is it like, I don't even want to think about it, I just do it?
Well, you know, people talk about swings, and you've got guys who have very pretty swings that can't play at all. And then you've got guys like
Connor.
You've guys like myself that look at quirky looking swings. There's a few guys out there now, Jim Furyk, we swing it very similar, but it doesn't matter what you do around here, it's what happens at the ball. And it's, you know, for any of you out there who don't swing the club sort of like Tiger Woods, Tiger got a lot of mention tonight, didn't he? Yeah. That doesn't matter, you know, because I have an old saying, every cripple has his own way of walking. And, you know, if once you get into the impact, it doesn't matter what you do. Mm.
You were saying there that it was a swing you were born with and obviously had it from such a young age. As you were growing into the game and as you're in your teenage years and you're becoming more successful, were people, coaches, people around the game putting you under pressure at any stage to change it?
There was a very famous golfer called Henry Cotton. And he was one of the best golfers I ever saw. But he ruined more good players by trying to teach them. And I used to go down to him in Portugal for a few weeks back in the 70s. And he used to say to me, he used to call me Laddie. He said, Laddie, whatever you do, don't listen to any coaches. Just do your own thing. And it's true. For me, to change my swing back in the 70s, when I started playing well, I would have had to go off the tour for about 2 or 3 years and completely rebuild my swing. And I didn't think it was worth it.
Did you ever try and rebuild your swing?
I did, but it never worked. I used to look at myself in the mirror and I think, yeah, that's good, that's good. And then as soon as I put the ball down, I go like this, you see? All habits die hard.
What were you thinking? Because this is just full of golf nerds, okay? There's a lot of very sad people here, so they'll kind of want to know. When you're on your takeaway, like, were you thinking I'm keeping my elbow higher?
No.
No thinking?
Don't think about anything. All I think about is what kind of a shot I want to play.
As in visualize the...
See the shot, you know? Right. I mean, if you don't see the shot, it's very hard to play it.
What was your reaction the first time you saw it on camera?
Shocked.
Really?
Shocked.
When was that?
I don't particularly like watching myself on camera. In the 70s, a good friend of mine, who does a bit of commentary for Sky, South African guy, he saw me playing in Madrid.
Yeah.
And he didn't believe it was me. He saw the golf bag saying Eamon Darcy, and a friend of his, John Bland, said, yeah, that's Eamon Darcy, Ryder Cup player. This guy said, no, it can't be. And he followed me down to the first tee and listened to the starter saying, from Ireland, Eamon Darcy, because he thought, this is a joke.
You first time went on the European Tour in the 1970s
and
started very well. Like in 1975, you were third in the Order of Merit.
Yeah.
In 1976, you were second Order of Merit.
Yeah.
Seve,
yeah,
the only player ahead of you. And across the 1980s, you were in the top 30 Order of Merit on 8 occasions. So there was a great consistency to it, which is the amazing thing. Was there ever kind of, amongst fellow pros, were they saying, what are you at? Or did they understand that it was actually a great swing?
Well, I think, you know, the pros, they don't really talk about your swing. When you start playing and you start shooting some scores, people forget about your swing.
Okay.
They just want to see how you are inside. They think this guy gets under pressure, he's going to choke or do something. Didn't matter how good you swung it or how bad you swung it. If it's just that feeling in your gut that you were able to handle it. So that's really more what the pros would talk about. That guy's very solid under pressure, or he's not so good. Mm. You know?
And yours held up under pressure? You won 4 times?
Well, I won 22 times.
Oh, did you?
I've won 4 times in Ireland and 18 times worldwide. Yeah.
Right, excuse me. Sorry, I read 4 European tour victories. Yeah, but it's obviously I know you played in New Zealand and different tours as well.
I played Africa, New Zealand, Australia. I played everywhere. Right. I was like, have bag, will travel.
What was that like in the 70s and 80s?
It was great.
Really?
Absolutely great. I loved it. My old pal, Christy O'Connor, God be good to him, we went everywhere. We had a great time. You know, to enjoy a sport and to get paid for it, it's great. So, I played in Russia, but if there was a tournament anywhere, we went and played. We were like the hard guns.
Yeah. Planes, trains, automobiles.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What was the tour, European tour, worldwide tour, what was it like mid-70s in terms of how players were looked after? I think everyone remembers the Irish Open of the early 80s and the middle 80s when we'd all the superstars over, and it felt like the centre of the sporting universe at that stage. Was a lot of golf like that in the 70s?
No. I mean, golf in the 70s wasn't great. The tournaments were small. Not so many of them. That's why we had to travel worldwide. But as television came on stream, the sponsors came more on board to get involved. Mm. So it probably wasn't till the late 70s when Europe got involved in the Ryder Cup. We used to play in that Ryder Cup. It was Great Britain and Ireland, and we used to get hammered every time. And Jack Nicklaus had said to a guy called Lord Derby, this thing is going to die unless we can bring Europe into it. And that was the start of it. In 1979, Europe came on board.
And how do people in Great Britain and Ireland, golf people, feel about it being expanded?
They loved it. They loved it because nobody wants to go and just get hammered every time. You know, you can only take so much of that. So when guys like Seve and that came on board, the whole dynamics changed in the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
What was Seve like?
Seve was great. I mean, he was real flamboyant, and he did his own thing. He was a prima donna, but I mean, he was great. I mean, everybody loved him. He was just a good looking guy, and he won golf tournaments. So I mean.
Yeah.
What more could you ask for?
Yeah. And the level of talent around the greens, could you pick up stuff from him?
He used to play shots that he was a bit like Tiger Woods. He could see a shot that nobody else would see. Where he and I would have been similar would have been chipping. I was always a very good chipper at the ball. But he was fantastic. And he just brought the game to a different level in Europe.
Mm. That was quite an exciting time for European golf. Like, you had the Big Five, and you know, you had Seve, and you had Faldo, and you had Woosnam, and Sandy Lyle was there as well, and Faldo, I think I said Faldo. Mm. Like, all of these guys were doing amazing things. It was quite an exciting time to be part of European golf.
They were winning all the majors.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. And just golf became bigger and bigger. And that's why, I guess, today, now that Ryder Cup is so big.
Mm.
And this week they're playing the Irish Open. They're playing for 7 million, you know.
Did you get on well with those guys? Like Langer as well was part of that. Did you get to spend much time with them, or was it we're the major winners and the rest are the rest?
I spent more time with them when I turned 50, when I played in America on the Champions Tour.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That was like you weren't in a fast lane. It was like going back. Even though they play for great money out there, I still do. Everything had slowed down a little bit. People used to talk to each other.
Right, because Faldo was not friendly as a player in his pomp.
I always found Faldo okay because people found him a bit obnoxious, but I found him that if he hit a good shot, he'd take a good shot. There was no real sort of kind of small talk. Like, I'd much prefer to play with him than Lee Trevino.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, Lee Trevino never shut up. I mean... You'd have to put the earplugs in, you know? I mean, that's all he was, yap, 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 yap. And it was his way of
staying relaxed, probably.
Yeah, it was his nervous thing, but drive you mad, he would.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know...
Does Lee listen to the pod?
But,
But well, if you didn't know, Connor's good friends with Nick Faldo, yeah, so yeah, be careful what you say as well here.
Faldo still struggles to find people to go to dinner with, I think.
Yeah. Desperate.
Yeah. If you're buying, I'm there.
Clearly.
What was Langer like? What Langer's doing on the Champions Tour now is beyond belief. Like, he's still, there's not a pick on him. He's playing as well as ever. What kind of competitor was he?
Well, Langer is very, very religious.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be somebody now you'd be ringing up to go out and have a pint with. But a very, very nice guy and incredible competitor. He's just, his goals, they haven't changed. He's been winning now since for 40 years.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And still when he plays, like in the Masters, he'll pop up as well on the leaderboard.
Yeah, I mean, they must hate him in America on that Champions Tour because he steals all the money. Yeah. You know?
It's very hard to compare or pick the best. Who was the best two or three, if you had to pick the best two or three that you got to play with in person? Because I always feel bad with all these players that we mentioned. We didn't see enough of them in their pomp. Who stood out for you as the top two or three?
Jack Nicklaus has the best record.
It's Connor's dad's favourite player as well, yeah, which is important.
So, I mean, he won 18 majors and he was probably second 18 times in majors.
Yeah. Mm.
So it's very hard to take that away from him.
But do you agree, you know, people say Jack was the best champion, but Tiger was actually the best player in his pomp.
Yeah, I mean, Jack couldn't hit shots that Tiger would hit.
Right.
And
but he didn't have the clubs either, did he, I suppose, back
no,
then?
No, that's true. That's true. Mm. But, I mean, to stand on the tee and watch the two of them playing and they both hit a shot, you go, when Tiger hit a shot, you go, wow. A bit like Rory. Mm. You know?
Was Jack just more, and I use this term, you know, advisedly, was he just more solid?
More solid is correct. And
less spectacular.
Well, he was spectacular in a way, but he knew what was happening. And the big occasions never got to him, like Tiger. But Tiger obviously had more problems with his body, you know. Jack didn't hit it as hard as Tiger. Mm. But
and who made you go, wow, out of the generation you played with, you know, if you're talking spectacular?
There was a guy called Tom Weisskopf.
Oh, yeah.
When he hit a ball, you'd go, jeez, that's unbelievable. The ground used to shudder. And you thought, in your wildest dreams, you couldn't hit it like that.
Did I read Tom Weisskopf wanted you to come and play on the US tour?
He did, yeah. I used to go shooting with Tom.
Shooting animals?
Yeah. What?
We'll edit that out later.
A startling revelation on tonight's show.
They hadn't heard that word back in those days. They hadn't heard of that word, shooting.
What was it?
What you were talking
hunting.
About.
Hunting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Are we talking about the same thing?
Yeah. No, for a weird moment, honestly, I thought this was some golf thing that I hadn't yet got to do. Right. Was this like a form of the game, like the golf sixes? Right, so you went hunting with Tom Weisskopf.
Yeah.
Right, what would you do? Where would you go?
Well, we could shoot pheasants. When you come over here, you used to come over.
Did he?
Shoot pheasants over here, yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Didn't realize that. And he wanted you to come play the US tour?
He did. He thought I had the game to play it in the 70s. Do I regret not going? I probably do a little bit.
Do you agree that you might have been better suited to the States?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I had the type of game, I hit the ball very high. And I used to spin the ball a lot. And in the States, back then, they played golf courses with much more water on than we did. Here, the secret was to hit the ball low with the equipment you had, you know, keep it low under the wind because the golf ball wasn't as good and the equipment certainly wasn't as good.
It's more target golf in the States.
Absolutely.
And that would have suited you. Why didn't you go?
I was probably a little bit nervous because I was doing so well in Europe and making a nice living, and I thought it was a big upheaval to go and do it.
Right.
I don't lose any sleep over it.
Sure.
But I wish I had probably gone and I had to wait till I was 50 to go and do it.
And how did you find it when you went over then?
Loved it.
Right.
Loved it. Biggest check I ever made in my whole life. was in the second tournament I played in, the Mexican Open. I made 240,000.
Where'd you finish?
Second.
Wow.
You know?
The Champions Tour, I mean, that whole generation did better on the Champions Tour financially than they ever did playing.
Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, it was great. I wish I was 50 again.
So Weisskopf is the one. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, he was...
I mean, it's not like he's a nobody. He's an unbelievable player and, like, a phenomenon, but it...
Yeah, Palmer. I mean, Palmer was... He was exciting to watch, too. Sam Snead. I mean, just... Sam was like somebody just starting a car. It was just pure genius. Yeah. It was effortless.
That was the definition of a pretty swing.
Yeah. Sam Snead.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, he was mean.
Was he?
Yeah, to be born with such a swing like that, you'd think he'd been a nice guy.
Yeah.
But,
angelic, I would have thought, would have swing.
Yeah,
like
I played with Sam a few times, but I remember a story. We played in Italy, the Italian Open in Sardinia, and we weren't playing very good. And I remember standing on the first team with him, said, Sam, we're not so good this week. And this young fella who was making up the third in the group, he was so excited. And he went up and literally he went down on his knees, said, Mr. Snead, it's an honor to play with you today. It's a dream come true. And Sam said to him, well, son, he said, it's like this. He says, you play shit and you draw shit.
Oh, wow.
Jesus. Slamming Sam was an asshole.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's dreadful.
Yeah.
That's a good takedown.
Because Sam has the whole, oh, shucks, man of the people kind of vibe going on.
Well, he was a real redneck, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Palmer, did you ever play with Palmer?
I did.
Did you?
I did. I played with him, and the biggest tournament we used to have in Europe was sponsored by Colgate. And I had the unfortunate, I was leading the tournament. It was the PGA at Sandwich, a great golf course.
Yeah.
And it blew a gale on the Sunday, and I shot 76. He shot 72, and he beat me.
Right.
So,
what was he like?
He was a bit. He was tough. He used to growl a lot, you know. And he wouldn't sort of be saying, you know, he wouldn't be saying, did you enjoy your dinner last night, or things like that, you know? It was just, it reminded me of my old pal, Christy O'Connor Sr.
Yeah.
You know, they just wanted to win everything. That's why they were so good.
So he was in competition mode.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he was great.
Where does, we did a show out in the at Royal Dublin not so long ago, and Christy's a difficult one to put into context, because it's very easy for people to say, well, he never won a major. And yet anybody who saw him in his pomp says, you know, he was as good a ball striker and as good a player as anybody worldwide. And it's kind of hard to balance those two things.
He was so good. I mean, I used to play with him every week on the tour, Christy Jr. and myself. And I'll tell you how good he was. Jr. and myself used to hit golf shots, and he would look at us and he'd say, how can you hit a shot so bad? You know? I mean, he'd say, what were you thinking of? It just wasn't in his armory.
Right.
They'd do that, you know? And he was a type of guy. Christy, he enjoyed the odd pint. And if he was a little bit unsure on his feet, all you had to do was put a club in his hand, and suddenly he was like a pillar. He was so balanced. And that's the way he was, he was so natural. Mm. Put the club in his hand and he would do it effortlessly.
Yeah. And would he kind of hit it right to left, left to right? Could he do everything? Would he do both?
He could hit it any way you wanted.
Okay, all sorts.
Yeah.
Right.
He had it all.
In terms of, say, you have Weisskopf who'd make you go, wow. Christy would make you go, wow?
No. Well, Christy was like a machine.
Okay.
But a beautiful machine. And he would just know exactly where the ball was going to go. Mm. He wasn't a good putter.
Yeah.
That was his downfall.
That's what Sedge, yeah.
You know, and when you think about it, people say he never won a major. Now, he'd only play one major a year. When he was in his prime, it took a day to go to America on one of those planes. Mm. But he had his chances to win the Open. Didn't happen, but, I mean, he's won 70 tournaments, you know.
Yeah. I guess one of the things you're remembered most for, and I mentioned it introducing you, is the 1987 Ryder Cup. And that was the first one that Europe won on U.S. soil.
Yeah.
That's the one you flew out in Concorde for the first time. Yeah. And it was Bernard Gallagher, was it, who was like, we've got to do all this properly now and we're getting jackets.
No, not Gallagher. Jacklin.
Jacklin, sorry, of course. Yeah, Tony Jacklin.
Yeah.
He was the captain. He said, we're doing this properly.
We flew, I was telling Liam with me tonight, we flew out on Concorde and the captain was a keen golfer. And he's coming in to land the plane and he asked for a flyover and he was refused. So he's putting this, I don't know how far it was off the ground, say it was 1,000 feet or something. And then he was given permission to do a flyover. But Concorde was so noisy. I mean, it was the noisiest plane. So he puts the foot down anyway, and up we go again. And he said, they'll know we're in town now. So we're flying around, and we go to different golf courses. And he said, no, that's not good enough for you guys. And eventually, we came to Muirfield Village. And he said, this looks good enough for you guys. And we're coming down one of the fairways flying over it. And Payne Stewart and Andy Bean were playing the 18th, and they saw this jet coming. They thought, Jesus, this is World War III, you know?
I never heard that.
Yeah, but when we landed, typical American thing, they had the fanfares and everything, and we all had a white Cadillac with our own private number plates on. So we get into these cars anyway, and driving down the motorway. The motorway is closed off just for us. We get down and we play and we win. And on the Monday morning, we get up for breakfast. There's no breakfast. We head to the airport and we're stuck on the motorway for 3 hours.
No way. Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Oh, they were really pissed.
That Sunday morning of the singles when you take on Ben Crenshaw, it's your, what, fourth Ryder Cup at that stage?
Yeah.
And it ends up in your last Ryder Cup. Have you a good sense that Sunday morning that this is going to be your final appearance in the Ryder Cup? Because I know Ryder Cups have probably been quite difficult up to that.
Did I think that was going to be my last Ryder Cup?
That this was going to be your last day?
No, I actually should have made the one after that. I was beaten by 52 pounds.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's another story, but... No, I mean, I just, I felt that team was so good, and I was somebody that obviously wasn't as good as our top players, and I just hoped that I was able to contribute something to the team, you know?
Yeah.
That's all you can hope for. And the guy I played against, I knew very well, Crenshaw, lovely fella, and I didn't see it happen, and I didn't. I just showed you I was concentrating really well. He broke his putter. Mm. He hit it off. He hit an old putter, and he hit it off a cone, and the head fell off it. And if you do that, and it's your fault like that, you can't replace it. Well, I didn't think he'd broken it. I thought he missed a couple of putts with it. His one iron was his next best thing, that maybe this was a secret weapon. And people say to me, when did you know he'd broken his putter? I said, I didn't know. And that was true.
At any stage.
I knew he wasn't using it, but I didn't know he'd broken it.
And had he broken it out of anger, or was it just accidental?
Well, I think there was a little bit of... It was an accidental anger. Yeah, so...
How did he put with the one iron?
He put it fantastic. I mean, I was about the third last match out, and we had a fantastic lead going into the last day, but then it just went pear-shaped. All the guys, not all, but nearly all of them were down, and all of a sudden we looked like we were in big trouble. And the front nine, I played great. I knocked it. I was out in 32, and I was cruising. I was three or four up, and I thought, this is great. And then all of a sudden, sort of the panic set in a little bit, and I went from three up to one down with three to play. With two to play. One down with two to play. And people talk about my putt on 18, but it was my second shot to 70, and I hit a great shot up over the trees from about 180 yards with a six iron to about 2 feet. And that sort of, I think it unnerved Ben that I hit that shot. And I hit a 3-wood down the last. He went with driver, and he pulled it, and there was a little river running down. He went into the river, and he dropped it out. And he played a great third shot into the bunker. I hadn't hit my second shot yet. And I was going in with 4-iron, and I thought, now, just whatever you do, just try and get it onto the front of the green. But I hit it too low, and it hit the top of the bunker, came back in. He was before me, and he hit a great bunker shot out to about 12 feet. And the one thing you couldn't do on that green was go past the hole. It was like putting on polished marble. It really was. And I got in, I was closer to the lip, and I panicked a little bit, and I hit it out to about, still a good shot, to about 6 feet past. Of course, Ben, being the player he was, he knocked it in with his one iron, so I had to hold the putt. And, well, we know what happened. It went in, but it was, when I got over the, people say, were you really nervous over the putt? I actually wasn't. I was so focused. But what I did remember saying to myself, just kiss this putt now, kiss it. Because if it doesn't go into the hole, it goes 20 feet past. It just won't stop. And, you know, and it ended up being a sort of a real pivotal turn in the match.
Yeah, and that's the point that ultimately wins Europe, the first Ryder Cup on American soil.
Yeah.
Is that easily the highlight of your career?
Well, when I captained Ireland to win the Dunhill Cup for the first time, that was pretty special too. I guess doing things for the first time is always special. Yeah, I know. You should come in there. You should come in there.
I've never done it.
Oh, I'm so sorry for you.
I can't wait.
Who was the US captain that year? Was it
Nicklaus?
Nicklaus, yeah. Did he say anything to you?
Yeah, he actually, because I played Jack a few times in matches, and he gave me a good old walloping, and it was nice to get a bit of revenge, even though he was such a great captain. It's a shame that he was the captain and he had to get beaten, because there was a few guys I would have loved to have seen captain. To be beaten, but
I feel like we're warming up here, Eamon. Let's start naming names.
But he put his arm around me and he said, Eamon, that putt, he said, you're going to remember for a long time. It's so significant. And you know, I take things in my stride. You know, if it happens, it happens. But he was right. It was a big putt.
Jack Nicklaus is coming across very well this evening, I would say, isn't he? Amazing. Because I'm sure he was sickened to lose at Muirfield as well.
But you know, the funny thing about that putt was, during the closing ceremony, Sam Torrance said to me, he was still on the course, I heard you hold a good putt here on this green. We were standing on the green. I said, yeah, it was okay. He said, where was it? And I showed him, and he took a club out of somebody's bag. All our clubs were around the green. He took a club out and he hit it with one hand and went straight into the hole. And he says, I thought you said that was a tough putt.
It's the pressure. Yeah, the pressure is the difference. Do you still watch a lot of the current guys? Are you keeping an eye on it?
Oh, I do, yeah. I mean, I've retired from actually competing, but I'm still very active. I'm doing corporate days now, and I do a bit of work with some of the guys, you know, McGinley and these guys, to give me an odd call up and a bit of experience.
Yeah. Who stands out? Who are the players you really like at the moment? Who's going to dominate over the next 5 years?
Well, I don't know about the next 5 years, but I'd love to see Shane Lowry doing well this week. He's playing great.
Yeah.
And he's a big player. Now, it's a great field, but I just feel if the wind was to blow a little bit, which it mightn't do, he's got a big chance. Mm.
What's La Hinch like for people who haven't played it?
It's a beautiful golf course. It's they've made a few changes to it. These links golf courses depend on the weather.
Sure.
You know, because these guys get stuck into them and they bring them to their knees. The only thing that saves them is rough and well, mostly weather.
Yeah.
Wind. Mm. It's going to be a great week. I don't know who's going to win. They've got such a strong field there. They really have.
Yeah, 13 of the world's top 50.
Is that what they have there?
It's good going for,
it's,
you know,
great.
Yeah.
It's great.
Because the week after the British Open is the WGC, so it's hard to get them to play 4 weeks in a row. They're not going to do it.
Okay.
Actually, funny you mentioned Larry, because Porter Carrington was on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he said something about Larry, which I just thought was amazing, really. He said the big issue he had over the first or the latter half of last year was that he broke his driver, his favourite driver, and he couldn't get one that just felt right.
Okay.
And I was kind of saying, but you're like, just goes into a, you know, into the truck and says, you know, I'll take any one of the 10 that you have there. And he was saying, no. It seems it's almost like impossible to get exactly the same kind of club.
It is, because, you know, we all use graphite shaft drivers, and they're all different. It doesn't matter what the manufacturers say. They can set them up same swing weight,
that's what he said,
same
yeah.
spec, every way. But they feel different.
So in your day, how often would you change clubs, 70s, 80s?
We used to play with wooden heads, you know?
Yeah.
And we'd no caravans around to say, oh, I don't like that, give me another one. You got a driver and it looked nice, you got to like it. And the only reason you changed it was when it broke on you.
Yeah.
But no, that's all changed.
Yeah, I would have thought so.
Yeah.
What about the Open at Portrush?
Yeah, that's going to be great. I mean...
Who's going to win that?
Oh, jeez, if I knew that now, I'd tell you. Rory, I mean, he's thinking about... I don't know. He should actually be playing this week. I think this would have been a great build up for him for Portrush. He has to be one of the favourites. Koepka, I mean, they're all playing great, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know? And they hit it so far. That's the, you know, I think I'm hitting it all right. And I played with Rory 2 years ago in Dubai, and I thought I was hitting it all right till I watched him hit his drive. Hmm. You know, it's a different game.
Yeah.
Where do you think his game is right now? Because in one way you look at his season, he's won twice. For most players, that'd be a brilliant season, but not really for Rory. And in the majors, it's been a bit of a letdown for 5 years now.
I think his game is it's nearly there. His putting is definitely improved. That was the biggest thing I saw. His wedge play and his putting. It's funny, he's a real streaky putter. I remember Des Smith telling me he watched a young fella down in Baltray 15 years ago, and he hit this shot to the last green, a 3-iron, par 5, up into the heavens, pitched onto the middle of the green. And he held the putt, and he said his name is Rory McIlroy. And I said, that's incredible. I said, is he the real deal? He is, he said, but he's not a great putter.
Okay, even then?
Then. You know, I think great putters, you're born to be a great putter. It's hard to make yourself be a great putter.
Right, because I had got the impression it was only almost... Latterly, that he's almost tightened up with the putting and maybe started to think about it too much, and it's not as free flowing. But it's interesting, as a 15-year-old, that's what Des saw.
Yeah, it's true though.
Right.
Some guys are just brilliant putters. Like if Tiger, I mean, Tiger was the best putter in the world. When he was winning, he was the best putter in the world. Mm. He used to kill guys. Mm. Just he'd hold putts that you'd be happy to. Get down in two. Mm.
It must be unbelievably frustrating for Rory to have that, you know, to hit these unbelievable shots and then time after time be missing these putts.
Yeah, it is.
You can tell him I'm doing lessons. Ireland AM.
Who did you give the lesson to?
Simon Delaney, the three presenters. But Simon's actually a good golfer.
Right.
So I just said to him before, I was like, listen, whatever you do, don't ask me my handicap on the television. Because it would have been a bit, because literally on the screen, my face came up and it said Conor Moore, impressionist and amateur golf pro. Literally, there's no
category all to yourself.
First off, there's no such thing. And whoever did the research literally didn't have a clue who I was anyway.
What were your five tips? Not that anybody should listen to them having played with you today.
I gave it the whole grip pressure thing. I was like, not too soft, not too hard, whatever. And I was like, and then I was like, your alignment, I was like, pick a line there in front of the ball and hit it. And then I said, then obviously pace, if it's a downhill putt, it's kind of softer, if it's up, like this was basic. But the end of it then I said, and you just got to rock the shoulders. And Lisa was taking the putt, she goes, what? And I was like, oh, just hit the ball. She didn't have a clue what rock the shoulders meant. So I was like, I wasn't prepared for a follow-up question.
When you think of all those things, it's hard to hit a putt, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. She drilled it a mile past the hole. I was like...
Tell me, those greens out there today, did you play?
Yeah.
They're tricky, aren't they?
Yes. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
Very tricky.
But you had a great day. The course was great condition.
I looked at it. Wasn't the course's fault.
No.
Really tough out there.
What was the winning... What was the winning score today?
91 points.
What?
Yeah. From some lad off like 22, 19, 21, and there we are. They won a 17. 17. Oh. 91 points, so they did well.
Some bandits, huh?
Listen, it's been great having you on.
Yeah,
thanks so much for coming here and chewing the fat up. Some amazing stuff. I'll never look at Sam Snead on YouTube the same way again. Absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And thank you again for coming. Appreciate
it. Thanks a lot.
So, round of applause. Eamon Darcy, Conor Moore, everyone. That is pretty much us done. We'll let you go. You've homes to go to. It's a Monday evening, 9:30. Nathan, thank you.
Sure, sure.
Everyone, thanks a million for coming. As always, friends of the pod, we appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed it. Come to Abu Dhabi. It'll be fun. We'll see you when we see you again. So thanks a million. Cheers.